Chapter 23. The spring day was cool and brisk as Bell departed the train at the town depot and walked to the corner of Aspen Street and Colorado Avenue, where he found a three-story wooden building with a sign out front that read, Mamie Tubbs Boarding House. He carried a battered valise and wore a worn wool coat with a vest and flannel shirt underneath. His pants were heavy cotton with almost the consistency of canvas. Boots that looked as if they had walked 5,000 miles protected his feet, while a rumpled old Stetson sat solidly on his head. The fabricated image was embellished with a Dublin-style bent pipe wedged between his teeth. Bell also walked with a pronounced limp, as if his left leg was stiff. He stepped into the parlor of the boarding house and was greeted by Mamie Tubbs, a jolly woman as round as a huge pear. Her gray hair hung down her back in two braids, and she had a face that looked like a large saucer with a nose.
"Greetings, stranger," she said in a voice as deep as a man's. "Looking for a place to stay?"
"Yes, ma'am," said Bell politely. "I'm new in town."
$7 a week, including meals, providing you're at the table when I dish up."
He reached into a pocket, brought out a few folded bills, and counted out $7. "Here's your money in advance. I don't have much, but enough to tide me over for a while." She had noticed his limp when he came into the parlor.
"You looking to work in the mines?"
Bell tapped a hand against his leg. "My mining days ended when I was injured by a badly laid stick of dynamite." She eyed him suspiciously, beginning to wonder where any future rent was going to come from.
"Where do you expect to find a job?"
"A friend found me work as a cleanup man at the new Sheridan Hotel." She smiled.
"They couldn't find you a room in the basement?"
"All beds in the basement were taken by miners," Bell lied. He had no idea if miners slept in the basement. The impression of a crippled miner he knew would satisfy Mamie Tubbs enough so she wouldn't gossip around town about her new boarder. She showed him to his room where he unpacked his valise. He removed a towel wrapped around a Colt Browning Model 1905 45 caliber automatic pistol with a custom 20-shot magazine and shoulder stock that fit in a slot behind the grip. He slipped the weapon under the bed but kept his trusty Remington Derringer inside his Stetson. He re-tightened the wrapping around his knee so it hindered normal movement. After a beef stew dinner in Mamie's dining room, he met the other people who were staying at the boarding house. Most were miners, but there were a few store clerks and a husband and wife who were opening a restaurant. After dinner, Bell strolled up Pacific Avenue and studied the layout of the town. Telluride, the name supposedly came from the saying, "To hell you ride," was launched after gold was discovered in the San Miguel River. The gold, along with silver-bearing ore, found high in the San Juan Mountains, quickly attracted an army of prospectors and miners over the next 50 years. By 1906, more millionaires per capita lived in Telluride than in New York City. The miners eventually dug 350 miles of tunnels that honeycombed the surrounding mountains, some as high as 12,000 feet above sea level. The population soared to over 5,000, and the rip-roaring town soon overflowed with wild and crazy living mixed with a healthy dose of corruption. There were 36 saloons and 180 prostitutes to keep the army of miners in a good mood after long 12-hour shifts in the Silver Bell, Smuggler Union, and Liberty Bell mines at $3 a day. When the sun dropped behind the mountains and darkness came, a blaze of lights flashed on up and down the streets. In 1892, mine owner L.L. Nunn had hired the electrical wizard Nikola Tesla to build the world's first alternating current power plant to move ore on cables down the mountain and miners up from town. After running lines from the power plant into town, Telluride became the first town in history to have electric street lamps. Belle walked past the notorious cribs where the scarlet women plied their trade. The upper-class houses were called the Senate and the Silver Bell. Music could be heard through the windows out on the street as a piano player pounded out the Dill Pickles Rag and other ragtime tunes. The street was called Popcorn Alley, its name coming from the constant opening and closing of doors all night. He moved up to the main section of town on Colorado Avenue and looked through the windows of the Telluride First National Bank. Tomorrow he would meet with the town sheriff and the bank manager to plan a reception for the butcher bandit, should he swallow the bait and make an attempt to rob the bank. He passed the old San Miguel Valley Bank that Butch Cassidy had robbed 17 years previously. The evening air had turned cold once the sun took its heat beyond the mountain peaks. Belle noticed that the 9,000-foot altitude caused him to take deeper breaths. He ignored the main street saloons and headed for the new Sheridan Hotel. Belle stepped inside the lobby and asked the desk clerk to see the manager. In a minute, a short man with a florid face and bald head came out of the office with quick, hurried steps, like a mouse running from a hole in the wall. He smiled an official smile, but not too warmly, as he sized up Belle's rather dowdy appearance. "I'm sorry. All our rooms are taken. The Sheridan is full up." "I don't want a room," said Belle. "Are you Mr. Marshall Buckman?" The smile straightened and the eyes narrowed. "Yes, I'm Buckman." "I'm Isaac Belle with the Van Dorn Detective Agency." Buckman's eyes widened again and he bowed. "Mr. Belle, I received your telegram. Permit me to say the Sheridan will cooperate in every way." "The most important thing," explained Belle, "is to confirm to anyone who asks that I work here as a janitor." "Yes, of course," Buckman said in a patronizing manner. "You can count on me."
"Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Now, if you don't mind, I think I will enjoy the best whiskey in your bar."
"We serve only superior whiskey from the finest distillers. No local rot gut is tolerated at the Sheridan." Belle nodded and then turned his back on Buckman and stepped toward the bar. He paused and read a plaque listing rules for the hotel patrons. "Don't shoot the pianist. He's doing his damnedest. No horses above the first floor. No more than 5 in a bed. Funerals on the house. Beds 50 cents, with sheets 75 cents. At the doorway, he stood aside as a blonde lady whose face was hidden under a wide-brimmed hat stepped past him. All he saw was that she had a fine figure. Conversely, she paid no attention to the limping man who walked by her as she headed for the carpeted stairway leading to her room. Much later, Belle cursed himself for not recognizing the blonde, just as Margaret blamed herself for not identifying the limping man until it was too late.